Hey folks, I'm going to jump right into this. I think that long-winded introductions on videos like this are kind of silly, so I'm just going to fucking get right into it. Tarot. Tarot is a fascinating concept. It's usually associated with fortune-telling, but that is not the be-all and end-all of tarot. In fact, tarot is more closely associated with storytelling. You might be familiar with Joseph Campbell's The Hero of Many Faces, or The Hero's Journey, or The Monomyth, and tarot has a lot to do with that, as a matter of fact. In fact, Joseph Campbell cannibalized a lot of stuff from the tarot to make his Hero with a Thousand Faces thing. If you want to know more about that, there's a book called Hero of a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell. Very good stuff. Draws on Jungian philosophy, which I think is sometimes somewhat woolly, but I like it. It's interesting. If you've played the Persona games, especially Persona 3 and 4, you're probably very familiar with the tarot and how it pertains to stories in maybe a kind of symbolic way. And if you've watched JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, you also know a lot about the tarot, because there's kind of more of a tenuous, shall we say, connection with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, but it's still there. Now, what is the tarot, and what are the major arcana? Well, the major arcana, according to the Rider-Waite version of the tarot deck, there are a couple versions of this. The tarot include the following sort of characters and archetypes. Zero is the Fool, one is the Magician, two is the High Priestess, three is the Empress, four is the Emperor, five is the Hierophant, or sometimes this is known as the Pope. The Lovers is number six, the Chariot is seven, eight is Strength or Justice, nine is the Hermit. Sometimes this is called the Traitor, but I don't like that interpretation, so we'll just call it the Hermit. We have 10 is the Wheel of Fortune. That's pretty universal. Number 11 is Justice. This is also interchangeable with Strength. Number 8 and number 11, Justice and Strength. 12 is the Hanged Man. 13 is Death. 14 is Temperance. 15 is the Devil, or Typhon. I like Typhon. That's very Homestuckian. 17 is, or sorry, I skipped one. 16 is the Tower. 17 is the Star. 18 is the Moon. 19 is the Sun. 20 is Judgment. And 21 is the World. 21 is a very, very important number. We'll get back to that, maybe, if I remember. So why, there's technically 22, but it ends at 21. It starts with the Fool. The Fool is the main arcana of the tarot. And this kind of has a couple different interpretations, but the Fool is kind of the starting point for understanding the tarot. The Fool is your protagonist, the main guy. The Fool represents the naivete of particularly being young. It represents a new journey, and it represents the many pitfalls that a person might be vulnerable to. It would be helpful to look at the art for these, but this is an audio medium, so we can't do that. But I want to talk about how these archetypes pertain to Homestuck and draw some parallels between them. I don't really have a broad purpose for this particular lecture. I just want to introduce the idea of tarot, and I think doing it through Homestuck is a good idea. If you're interested in more, there are a lot of good places to learn about this. My favorite way to learn about tarot is to walk into a magic shop. And if you don't think that your city has a magic shop, you might be fucking wrong, because there are magic shops all over the place. In my city, there's a magic shop called Triple Goddess, and I shit you not, that place is wonderful. I love going in there. It's like a bookstore where, you know, there's crystals and whatnot. But look for a magic shop. Look for like a Reiki in your area. It's worth an outing. But I want to talk about the major arcana. So the Fool we've discussed. That's kind of the starting point. The Fool is the main guy, right? He is the protagonist. And we can understand this. I think, obviously, the protagonist of Homestuck is John Egbert. He is the protagonist. Like, there are many protagonists in Homestuck. There are many characters of which we take the POV. But he is the character. He is the person who we resonate the most with. He is the person who we are meant to understand as the protagonist in the most ephemeral sense. And I think this is because of his sort of naivete. Rose says at one point, "You are our leader because you basically don't know fucking anything and you have just this, you're full of hope." I'm paraphrasing, obviously. You all remember this. It's where she says, "That's why you're our leader, John." And it's later reflected when Dirk says, "That's why you're our leader, Jane." Now, John is a great fool. And fool, in this case, does not actually mean like a dumb guy, like we would colloquially know it. The fool is more like a little adventurer who runs around and he's very naive about the world and he learns more and he undergoes change. That is the main thing. And John Egbert certainly undergoes change. He is the fool of Homestuck. The next is the magician. And I think, obviously, the magician is best interpreted as Doc Scratch, especially in the inverted form. The magician, or the magus, or the magus, I don't really know, he is a dispenser of wisdom. He is sort of a guide to the protagonists on these journeys, and certainly Doc Scratch provides wisdom and guidance. He is the more, he might have once been a fool. You might think of Obi-Wan Kenobi. But in Homestuck, Doc Scratch is a very interesting example of this. Moving on to the High Priestess. Now, the High Priestess is one of the more symbolic ones, also called the Popess. I think Popess is a dumb fucking name, but we're not looking at the Tarot de Marseille. We're looking at the Rider-Waite version. Now, High Priestess symbolizes this sort of mystery, right? It symbolizes this very, like, what's going on? Not everything is as it seems. And I think the best encapsulation of this, especially in early Homestuck, is not actually Rose, but Jade. Jade has a very High Priestessly energy, where she kind of knows more than she lets on, or she doesn't always discuss her inner feelings with her friends. And she is the arbiter of many mysteries. I think Rose could also serve this archetype too, but Rose has a much more active role, and Jade tends to be the more passive character. I like that. The High Priestess, very mysterious. Next is the Empress. The Empress and the Emperor are kind of cards that go together. They represent paternalism and maternalism, respectively. The High Priestess represents a maternal drive, and this means maternal in all of its senses, like a female authority figure. And I think there are a lot of actually female authority figures, but I think the biggest one, obviously, is the Condess. She is the mother of an entire species, especially in an inverted example of the High Priestess. Condi could represent a maternal influence that is not actually good or nurturing. It could influence, Like we might think of her as a wicked stepmother if we see the inverted High Priestess. Or, sorry, Empress, not the High Priestess. Condi fascinates me to no end because she is such a straightforward example in so many ways, because she is literally the mother of a species. She is very matronly in many ways. But she's also just so unique as a character in her disposition and outward demeanor, where she just loves fucking, she loves money, she loves stuff, and she wants to, you know, regain her glory and also regain the troll race. But she goes about it in such a direct and funny way. The Emperor, on the other hand, is a paternal influence. And I think this arcana could be shared by Dad and Bro, because Dad is the very straightforward example of the father figure, whereas Bro is an example, again, of the sort of wicked father figure. They contrast each other very nicely, and it suits, like we're talking about, the fool is John Egbert, then the emperor is Dad. That's nice. Now, I do really like the reflections between Bro and Dad, and I think the biggest example is how Bro kind of rejects his status as a father. He doesn't want it. It's actually kind of hard to think of him as a father because he is a authority figure who refuses to acknowledge his own authority. He refuses to have Dave acknowledge his authority. He just kind of passively tries to influence things. It's a very hands-off approach and a very evil approach, I would say. I don't know. That's the Emperor, very supportive and protective card. And when inverted, like with Bro, it's very painful. Next is number 5, the Hierophant, or the Pope. Now, Hierophant is one of the most misunderstood arcana, because no one knows what a fucking Hierophant is in the modern day. The closest equivalent is Priest, but that isn't very... it's kind of tenuous. A Hierophant card essentially is about convention and tradition and ritual. You could also think of the Hierophant as a teacher and sort of a querent. And I think a good there's not really many Hierophants in Homestuck. It's kind of hard to draw a connection here, but I like the idea of the Sufferer being a Hierophant. He is a very wise person who tries to influence events and codify something better for his people, and totally utterly fails, but manages to make an interesting legacy. He is representative of the cyclical nature of especially troll society, but all of suburb as a whole, and he kind of carries a lot of shit on his back and goes unsung for most of the story. I like that. I don't really have much to say about the Hierophant. Like I said, he's the most misunderstood card, and I won't pretend to understand him much better. The Lovers is another card that, in my mind, is kind of a misnomer. In the Paul Christian version of the tarot, this is called the Two Roads, and I think that's a little better, because the Lovers implies choice. It implies choice, and it implies connection. And so this is less of a person embodied and more of a sort of, like many of the arcana, a concept. I think the explicit example of the Lovers is the choices that people are given in Homestuck by their denizens, especially the one given to Caliborn by Yaldabaoth. That kind of kickstarts the entire fucking plot of the whole thing. I think in Homestuck, the Lovers would have to be the Dad and Mom, because Dad and Mom represent not only actual literal lovers, but also the choice that John has to make between, like, playing the game and taking it seriously, and also, you know, seeing his fucking dad again. And ultimately the Lovers die, and they kind of that kind of codifies something inside of John, where he has to go on this journey now because Jack Noir kills his fucking parents. The point where Jack Noir kills John and Rose's parents is a very... it's a turning point in Homestuck. It's the first death in the comic other than, like, the fake-out death of John, you know, going God-tier. And it kind of changes the tone throughout the whole ordeal. The Chariot is next. And the Chariot is another card that represents a concept more than a person or an item. The Chariot represents forward motion. It represents perseverance, essentially. If you think of a chariot, you think of it going forward. It's moving towards a destination. And the Chariot is interesting in Homestuck because the forward momentum of Homestuck is kind of hard to define. The Chariot is kind of ill-defined in this work. From an analytical standpoint, we could say that, you know, this... they could benefit from a stronger presence of the Chariot. But I think the Chariot is best represented by that ship that Vriska rides around the medium. that is kind of the most determined that any character is, where Mina and Vriska and Arani are riding around that area. That's a good chariot in Homestuck. Next is strength. Like I said, strength and justice are kind of interchangeable. The Rider-Waite version is the only one that has strength at number 8, but we're going to talk about it here. Now, strength is an interesting one to me, because strength, it occurs in the middle of the tarot, whether it is in this position or the other position. But strength is sort of a triumphant conclusion, it's telling me, on Google. And I kind of agree with that. But it's in the middle of the tarot, which implies that this triumphant conclusion is in some way incomplete. It is a temporary win. It is if it comes up in the tarot, for instance, that you draw, it would mean like, okay, you're getting over an illness, or maybe a fight with a friend is going to come to an end soon. And that can be very happy, but it's not a systemic card. It's like a Band-Aid card. It says this problem that you're having is going to be gone, but you might still have systemic problems that you have to deal with, because it's not a very complete card. It is not a spiritual completeness. It is very superficial. And I think this is best represented in Homestuck by the scratch. The scratch is the strength, because the scratch is something that the characters are working towards, and it's something that is psychically interesting to the reader. But it is not the systemic finish to your story. It is the middle point of your story. It is the triumph that precedes greater problems. That is what strength is. Strength, I don't know. It's a very interesting card to me. I like to think about it. Next is the Hermit. The Hermit card is pretty simple. It is one of the most colloquially understood, because obviously we still understand the Hermit. Now, early in the story, we might have the Magician, like I said, with Obi-Wan Kenobi, who might also be a Hermit. But the Hermit is more often encountered later on in the story, and they are not a companion to the Fool. They are more like the Yoda. They are someone who must be sought after. They're someone who is very lonely, someone who has critical knowledge, someone who essentially tells the Fool, the strength that you seek is within yourself. And I think in Homestuck, the best example of the Hermit is Calliope, where she has a lot of information, but she is also a very lonely and tragic figure. The Hermit is not necessarily lonely and tragic, but I kind of like when it's lonely and tragic, so I like Calliope a lot, someone that the characters need to seek, who is alone. I think both versions of Calliope could adhere to this, where the first Calliope that we meet is an inverted hermit, where she is actually seeking knowledge from the players, and Calliope later on is more of a hermit herself, the non-inverted hermit. I like it. In one of these, this is called the Traitor. I think that adds a little bit of nuance to the Hermit, because the Hermit's advice is usually not very pleasant. Like, we think of Yoda, Luke doesn't exactly follow Yoda's teachings. Luke leaves, he is very impulsive. Or Calliope, we understand, is sort of a nefarious person, or someone with a kind of dubious agenda. So the Hermit is not always entirely good, but they're necessary. 10 is the Wheel of Fortune, and the Wheel of Fortune is, again, something that's very understood colloquially. Another word for the Wheel of Fortune is the Sphinx, which adds a sort of riddle mystery to it. You know, I wish this was at position number 8, because the Wheel of Fortune is obviously Vriska. The Wheel of Fortune represents sort of just random chance and luck, and Vriska is basically a force of random chance and luck. From her literal powers to the fact that she finds the house juju and all these different things. It's just very fascinating to me how much just random shit happens around her, even after she's dead. Or she is also the just randomly happens to be the thing in the retcon that needs to be fixed to fix the entire story. Next is Justice. Justice, like strength, is a card that has sort of a duality to it, a hidden duality. Justice outwardly is very pleasant. It's like, okay, finally justice is being served. Something is happening. But on the other hand, something is also lost. A bargain is made not with people, but with a cruel universe. And this implies that, like, something must be lost. Something must be bargained. Something, you know, is happening. Something must be sacrificed for your justice that you seek. I think in Homestuck, like I talked about just now, the retcon is an example of a justice. The retcon is very psychically healing. It's nice to see our characters get back, but we also get the sense of something tragic has happened. Something, you know, has had to happen to get here. Jade had to suffer on a 3-year cruise because of the death of John in this new universe. Vriska was never able to be killed and grow as a person. There's a lot of new drama that happens because of this. And it's, you know, it's a good thing. And justice is going to be served to Caliborn and, you know, all that stuff. But it's also not great. Next is the Hanged Man. The Hanged Man is a very, very good card. Hanged does not in this case mean dead. It implies, I don't know what the word would be, surrender. Surrender. Not sacrifice, but surrender. It implies also being suspended in some kind of problem. Think of Luke's, I'm using Star Wars as a reference a lot now that I'm thinking about it. Think of him, he is hanging upside down, he's waiting for that ice creature to come to him, and he's trying to reach for his lightsaber. He is hanged. He is hanging from his foot, and he has no one to rely on but himself. But the Hanged Man also implies that the strength is within you. And he finally, you know, gets the lightsaber from the little pile of snow. Now, the Hanged Man in Homestuck is Dave. He's a great Hanged Man. Because at some point in the story, he chooses to give up his nighttime powers because he sees that they're not good for him. They're not psychically affirming to him. And I like that. It's interesting that, I don't know, I like the idea of the Hanged Man as a character, as an archetype, because it so defies, like, the situation. It is a testament to the human spirit that, you know, when we're hung upside down, when we're fucked over, there is still something to be accessed, there is still something to us, and I like that. Next card is Death. And a lot of people love to say that death is like, that's not actually a bad card. It just means that something is going to end. It's going to come to an end. No, it's a bad card. It's a very bad card. It's a nefarious card. If you pull death, that means that something is going to end. Something that you treasure. If you pulled strength, that would mean the end of a problem or a renewal in conflicts. If you pulled death, best case scenario is like, okay, you're getting fired from your job. Worst case scenario, you are literally dying. Obviously, tarot is not real, so bear that in mind, but that is the meaning of death. Other names for death are mortality and nothingness, the skeleton reaper. This is not a good card. I want to fight back against that conception. It is not a bad card, just a nefarious card. It does not signify good things. Death in Homestuck is obviously Caliborn and Lord English. They represent literal death. They represent narrative death. They represent, they're the angel of double death. I don't have to explain anymore. They're a force of nature. They become a force of nature. Death in Puss in Boots would be a good example of this. They are just a pursuing force. At best, they're playful, and at worst, they're malevolent. They are just there to do a job. They essentially are just a force of nature that has to be reckoned with and kind of played around. It is it's entropy, essentially. And I like that. The next card is Temperance. And I like Temperance because it comes right after death and right before the devil, right? Temperance is an inner clarity. It is the calm mind. It is a moment of peace. I like that this one is kind of clumped together with the Hanged Man, the Hermit, Death, and the Devil, because temperance is so often needed in these moments. The best kind of thinking is done under duress, essentially. Temperance implies artistry, it implies creativity, it implies a lot of things, and it also implies, peace. It is an inner peace. It is the final stage of the stages of grief, acceptance. A lot of characters display temperance in Homestuck, but I think the greatest moment of temperance is when Terezi kills Vriska. It doesn't feel good, but it is a moment of clarity that Terezi experiences. She is very sure of herself. And ironically, later, she has to reverse that decision, which I think kind of sucks from a narrative standpoint, but whatever. It is a point of clarity. It does not imply that it is a good thing, but it implies that this is what needs to happen. I like that. It's very clear. It's determination in Undertale. That's a good example. The next, number 15, is the Devil. The Devil, also called Great Force or Typhon. This is a good card. Now, the Devil is not so much the Devil or some kind of evil guy. It also represents seduction of the material world, right? I like that. The seduction of the material world, visceral pleasures, the seven deadly sins, that kind of thing. The things that keep us in that cycle of karma, if you know what I mean. Now, the Devil usually refers to a being. But I think the Devil in Homestuck is the planet of Alternia. The planet of Alternia is a ruthless place and does not really allow for a lot of reflection. It doesn't allow for a lot of doing things on your own terms. It requires a lot of survivalist tactics. Sorry, my cat climbed on me. It requires a lot of stuff from you. It changes you into a devil. The denizens of Alternia literally have devil horns. Not literal devil horns, you know what I mean. But the Devil in Homestuck is this just great engine that turns people into exploited beings, exploiting others. And I like that. Well, I don't like that for them. I like that thematically. The next is a somewhat contentious card, the Tower. The Tower is a very staunch card. It reminds me of strength and temperance, where it's something that is very calm and peaceful, but also implies something else. The Tower is danger. It is the goal. It is the Hyrule Castle in Breath of the Wild. It is the place. It is Mordor. The Tower is Mordor. It is misery. It is the prison. It is the blasted tower in other interpretations. The Tower in Homestuck is obviously Skaia. Skaia is the end goal, and it is also the source of so fucking much of the problems of Homestuck. It is sort of the shadow antagonist to the series, and yet it is also the place and the item that can bring them salvation. The Tower is this place. I think it so well encapsulates the Tower. It's a little bit more ephemeral than like Mordor or the Death Star, but the Tower is a wonderful example of this. I love the Tower. The next is number 17, the Star. I like the Star. The Star implies a lot. Again, it's kind of a misnomer. One of its other names under the Italia, I don't know how to pronounce that interpretation, is Desolation. But desolation in kind of a fun way. The Star is a card of peace. I think the Star in many ways is the goal of the tarot deck. The moon and the sun are also in there as sort of symbolic things, but the Star is the point of denouement. It is the point where the falling action begins. The Star is the moment where the Death Star explodes, where the Tower of Mordor falls over. It is the end of your conflict. It is that systemic change that we talked about earlier. It is the end point. It is wonderful. It is what you have been searching for, and it is also a force of great change. The star, in my mind, in Homestuck is the House Juju. It is distilled into an artifact, and once it is found, its total, like, meaning is not understood, but it is the artifact that kind of is able to dispel the evil of the story. I like it a lot. It is a very melancholy card because it implies, okay, the story's over, but we're all different now, right? We're seeing that star at the end of the day, and it's cold comfort, and that's interesting. The moon is a... in my mind, it's kind of misplaced. The moon implies... It occurs after the denouement of the star, but it is kind of a... it's a duplicitous card. It does not imply, like, evil or nefariousness. It just implies some kind of misunderstanding or illusion that is occurring. It implies something is not what it seems to be. The peace that you have found is not true. And I don't know why. It's kind of misplaced, like I said. It appears at the end of the tarot, I think, to pair it with the sun. In my mind, the moon is represented well by the actual game of Spurb. It is something that is totally illusory. It is something that hides itself, and it is something that hangs over the story, much like the moon hangs over the tarot. The moon is, I don't know, not my favorite card. If I pulled the moon, I don't really know what I'd make of it. Because shit is always never as it seems, right? Like, that's a confusing syntactical sentence. Things are never always what they seem. What I mean by that is, like, everything is always fucked up. Nothing is ever revelatory, right? The moon is just kind of a boring card to me. If I pulled the moon, I'd be like, I know shit isn't what it seems, dingus. All right, the sun. The sun is very straightforward. The sun is, like, it's just the wind state, the wind condition of this story. It is... the happy ending. It is the falling action. It is the happily ever after. It is moving into something greater, moving into another story with better, you know, understanding. It is the final item. Judgment is so often comes after this because the sun is like, think of it this way. The sun is like your win condition, and then judgment comes after. This happens in Undertale, where you kind of finish the story, but then Sans is there to judge you. It's kind of like that. But the sun in Homestuck is Earthsea. Earthsea is this beautiful place where just everyone goes to have a good time. You know, society is back to normal. A sense of normalcy is made. But the sun also implies that something within you has changed. And that can be good or bad. In The Lord of the Rings, it's kind of bad and melancholy because you have to, you know, go live with the elves because you can no longer be part of the world. In Star Wars, it's good because it means a return to normalcy. It can be good or bad, but it implies that a change has occurred, and it's nice. Next is Judgment. And Judgment is a somewhat scary card, but it doesn't have to be. Judgment is essentially new beginnings, right? If the sun is the end, then judgment is where you say, okay, something's going to start anew. It implies the beginning of a new journey that you have are able to go on with your new knowledge. You are no longer a fool. You must go into the world. And judgment is essentially saying to you, are you good enough? Are you going to stack up to this new challenges of this world? Judgment... you know, again, on Earthsea, the challenge of the new gods to, like, become the new rulers of this place. I think Judgment could have been explored more in HS2 if HS2 was lived up to its potential, but that is what Judgment is. I like Judgment. It is one of those cards that has a lot to bite into. Next is the World. And the World could also be interpreted as everything. Or the voyage or the universe. It's also called time. Now, the world is kind of the entire story encapsulated. The world is your holistic story. And it also represents a cyclical nature where, okay, this story is done. The fool has completed his journey. The fool has been judged. And the fool can now embark on a different journey with different magi, with different things of that nature. A lot of sequels underline the essence of the world. Like I said, it has to do with time. And I think that the entire narrative of Homestuck can be encapsulated in the world, or the idea of paradox space. This place, this setting, but also this sort of symbolic interpretation of just narrative. The world is kind of a meta card. And for fans of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, it's kind of a meta ability where you can stop time. It's very, very strange. I like the world. It is a card that is very meaningless out of context. And it sort of forces you to take stock of everything that has just happened, the journey you have made, and kind of retrace your steps through what happened. And it makes you realize, like, what has changed, what has stayed the same, and what will always be. And that is the journey through the tarot through the lens of Homestuck. Now, this will not help you, you know, read your tarot cards or whatever. If you're looking for more esoterica, I might make more videos about this in the future. But the point of this was basically to get you to think about stories and archetypes and how... Maybe this gave you an idea for your own story. Maybe it gave you an idea for your own life. But in my mind, tarot cards bridge the gap between a story and the real world and the sort of stories that we are necessarily telling each other and ourselves all the time. Because you kind of think about, like, okay, this story is Luke Skywalker. He is the fool. But I am also the fool of my own journey. I am a fool in my own life. And I want to identify these things in my life. So it's like I said, the bridge between narrative and real world. That's a very pretentious way to put it. I don't think that this is like a real study in psychology or like, you know, reality. But it's good to think about. And there's a reason that these symbols have persisted for as long as they have. I hope you got something out of this. I don't know if I did, but if you did, that's wonderful. I like to make these. I'll probably put this up on Patreon and then YouTube later. So see you later.